Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 22 of the Homesteading UK Podcast. I'm Alan, I'm here with my mate Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Oi!
You good?
Lovely. Alan, you bring me to the most lovely place.
Mate, I'm spoiling you today.
We're sitting in a manky, derelict kitchen,
basically,
right?
A slum.
It's a squat. It's a manky, derelict kitchen that used to be my studio.
We used to record in here quite a lot, didn't we, back in the day?
Yeah,
so
we did.
A couple where we got, I think, Bunnings and Bodgers, maybe, one of those ones.
Oh, yeah.
I think that might have been one of the ones we recorded up here. There's a few episodes back in the
it's
day.
It's gone downhill, well, to be fair, since I was resident.
No one looking after it, no one was there, and it tells, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So, unfortunately, but
Alan's covered in mouse droppings, which is quite nice.
Delightful. Never mind. It's been a few weeks. How you been keeping? You all right?
Yeah, doing fine. Things have moved very fast, as they tend to do in fits and starts. But when we met last time, it was evident that it had been very wet March and April. But as we've come into May, there has been an upturn in temperature, certainly. Yeah. But it is still pretty wet, and it's due to be wet in the UK again.
Yeah. So. It's not warmed up yet either, really, has it? We had the old warm spell, but I wouldn't say it's warm.
Well, no, I was listening this morning and parts of the East Coast are still 8-9 degrees in a day.
Yeah.
So, I don't know about you, but it has played havoc with some of my sowings.
I'm a bit protected, because like you, I've got a lot of indoor space, relatively.
Even so?
It stopped me from sowing outside.
Yeah.
Really, and I haven't even done my spuds yet, but that's for other reasons we've come to later on.
Well, I haven't done mine yet, have I?
Have you not?
No.
No fun.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think a lot of people haven't.
Yeah.
But because I've built a propagating unit, which has got a heat mat inside, but even that has struggled because the nighttime temperatures are still so low.
Yeah.
And so the fluctuations, even in the day and the night, in an internal propagator, in a polytunnel, I've still had a lot of problems propagating my chilies in particular.
Yeah, I struggle.
And I've been trying to do them for about 2.5 months.
Right, oh really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
So I've had some, but normally I can have a really good rate of germination.
Yeah.
But it's so sporadic, so maybe, you know, in a cell tray of 24 cells, I might only be getting 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And so I'm having to sow and sow and sow. But the ones that came up early really struggled to thrive, even though they're in the propagator. But normally what I would do is once they've germinated in the propagator, I'll try and get them out as soon as possible so they don't get leggy and bottom growth. But as soon as you get them out, they just absolutely falter.
Right.
And then the bottom, you know, the temperature is getting so low. So even now, I'm still sowing chilies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm lucky because they'll be growing in a polytunnel.
Yeah, they'll catch up when they're in there.
They will catch up. But I think something which perhaps is worth talking about just briefly is that you can't just do what it says on the back of the packet sometimes. If it's cold, you've got to wait.
Yeah. Well,
if it's wet, you've got to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah? And, you know, vice versa. If we have a beautiful warm spring, you can chance your arm and have a go, but you might get caught by a late frost, but you might not.
Yeah, well, I've certainly had spuds in now previously when I've done them. Obviously, they were first earlies or salad potatoes I would have done back in the day, but they would have been in by now, probably almost 6 weeks.
Well, my salad spuds in the tunnel are up.
Yeah, yeah.
But my other spuds are chilling in the farm shop. They're just sitting in there.
Yeah.
But they're all right. It just will push everything back later on. And obviously, if you're dependent on early crops this year, I think you are going to find it quite tricky to bridge that. What is normally the gap, the main hungry gap, is going to be tricky to bridge, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
Because your winter crops will be finished.
Yeah.
And your spring crops might not have kicked on.
Yeah. I have to say, I was thinking I won't have much variety for a while, but I will be able to go and pick some things from the allotment.
Yeah.
Over this little spell that's coming up.
Yeah.
The purple sprouting broccoli is just finishing now.
Yeah,
my spring cabbage is either eaten or is now got bolt in, so that's gone. The kale, similar.
My kale's out.
Yeah, I had the last of my leeks last weekend. Had some little leeks left in, they've gone.
Yeah, mate, come up and get some. Oh, yeah. I did too many this year, but I haven't.
Yeah.
I've done too many for leeks,
but
I haven't done too many if they're your onions.
Yes, yeah. So I made the mistake of planning to do leeks and then not find any seed.
Can you
believe that?
That's pretty bad.
With that, I've got that grand plan, and I'm like, yeah, I'm the whole bed.
You should have asked me because I've got billions of seeds. excuse me. But one of the things which has been nice in the tunnel is that I remember around August, July, August, I did a whole raft of sewings which were to get us through this part. And some of the things of, like, my PSB came on really early because it was warmer. But things like the kale, I literally dug out last week.
Yeah.
I'm eating beautiful cauliflowers at the moment.
Lovely.
And I'm eating amazing collard green.
Yeah.
And I'm eating amazing cabbages.
Mm.
And they are proper big cabbages now. But the cabbage white fly is already down, you know.
Yeah, I saw one from the first one at the weekend.
And
yeah.
The cabbage whites are out already as well.
Yeah.
So we're just starting to battle those. But it won't be long before some of the spring crops are ready, and I'm probably talking about leaf first.
Yes, yeah. So I'm assuming you've got spinach that's gone through, and you're still eating that, I guess, are you?
Yeah.
So I've got that as well.
I've got two types of spinach. I've got proper spinach, and I've got New Zealand spinach or beet, or whatever it's
leaf
called.
Beet, yeah.
And my chard is still there.
Yeah.
And I won't dig that up in the hot tunnel until I know that the tomatoes are literally going in.
You are, yeah.
Because it's just having something.
Mm.
So the chard's there, spinach is there, the rocket has been great, the clatonia is finishing.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a miner's lettuce or whatever.
Yeah.
That's finishing. I'm eating the last of my Marvel of the Four Seasons. My herbs have gone absolutely crazy, like the coriander and the parsley.
Yeah, might be a bit cooler today, some of those.
Yeah, and the thyme and the oregano is all bushed right up.
Yeah.
You know, that's all in there. But if you were going to just go in there and try and find a green vegetable, that's what you're looking at. It's still those brassica leaf mainly, and I would say that I'm the first crop I'll have ready, new spring green crop, will probably be the mulch too.
Okay.
Before anything else.
So I'll have salad before the mulch.
Oh, no, I've got salad now.
So
I've got spring onions, by the way.
Have you?
Yeah. Which has been good. One little thing I learned this year is that I actually put a load of overwintering onions in last year.
Mm.
And I know that I haven't got the time for them to go to June. So we're just eating there. So they're small. They're not big spring onions.
I spoke to you before about a friend of the family who works at the garden centre. His wife's, I think, Thai. She does a lot of Thai cooking.
Yep.
There's a lot of spring onions. So they just literally put onion sets in because he buys them cheap because they're going over, you know.
Yep.
And so he just puts them in the garden like 400 or 500 at a time.
Yeah, that's it.
And then they just eat them as they want them.
That's it. Don't worry about them coming up, getting older, getting skins,
whatever. Just eat them as you need them. Don't need to worry about them growing to full size. Just eat them as spring onions. So if that works for you, it works for you. It's not the most cost effective for most of us, but I imagine he gets a discount and he can probably buy the ones that are going to be discounted.
Yeah, he might be doing it from seed even.
Yeah.
Because the spring onions, obviously, I'm eating, and the overwintering onions weren't set. Yeah. They were all seed that I set last year. So, and there's quite a lot of those, and they're just dotted around here and there. And so that's the hot tunnel that I've been growing in, which was my only tunnel this time last year, but now obviously I've got two. So the more temperate crops are now, so there's like a quarter of the polytunnel down to alliums already. It's all in, all the garlic and all the spring onions, like loads of them.
Yeah,
all multi-sown into blocks of 10.
Yeah,
and my indoor potatoes are in there. What else has gone in there? Oregon sugar pod mulch 2 is in there. There's about 6-7 rows of that.
Yeah,
I really wanted to plant my broad beans outside, but I can't. So they're going to have to go into that tunnel and take up an eighth of the space.
And the reason you can't is?
They're too big in the pot now. They've got to go in.
Right, okay.
And
can't wait for them to go outside.
It's been ploughed, the ground, but it's due to be wet tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I won't be rotivating next week.
No.
So then that's another probably 10-14 days before I've rotivated and got spoke. And they'll be gone over by then.
Yeah.
They're flowering already in the pots.
Wow, okay.
So they need to go in. So what I did do is I moved them out of the polytunnel because they're in green crates.
Yeah.
So they're out of the polytunnel because it's cooler.
Yeah.
So it's just checking a tiny bit.
Yeah.
But I will put them all in a block inside.
Okay.
And we might talk a bit about beans in a minute. So
we'll
I'm not going to go too crazy on beans.
Because I've gotten so far behind on my allotment. It's ridiculous. There's been so much other stuff going on. So at the weekend I went up there and I had a bit of a sort out of the existing plot that I had. 91B it's called. So I've been in there and just clearing and covering again, so mulching on top, so getting no dig stuff going along. Did a little bit of weeding because there was a few places where the grass had sort of taken over a bit, so I've weeded that out first, and then I've mulched over that as if I was starting again almost with the cardboard and everything else.
Yep.
And I've done, I think, probably, well, I did one bed of salad, which I planned to do.
Yeah.
All different salad crops and radish and beetroot and spring onions and whatever.
Yep.
And then because I had them, I put catch crops in some of the other beds. Right. I know are going to be, like, they're meant for the tomatoes.
Yeah.
But they're not going to go out for a few weeks. So what I'll do is I'll crop those to, and I'll just cut them down.
Yeah.
Or pull them out more likely. And then I'm planting the tomatoes around them. And then as the tomatoes grow bigger, I'll just pull the other bits out.
I had some trouble with my tomatoes as well.
Have you?
Some of mine are so small, like thumb sized.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't need a polytunnel to grow tomatoes where I come from.
No. It's been, again, down to germination.
The advantage I've got there, of course, is I bring mine indoors to do that, to get them germinated. And then once they're germinated, all you've got to do is keep the frost off them. They don't mind it a bit cooler.
Funnily enough, the Italian plum tomatoes, seeded and have bulked up lovely. So they're as long as my forearm now. Okay, they're a foot high nearly in the pot. But it was some of those F1s. They really struggled. Well,
Fandango you did. Did you Mountain Magic this year in the end?
Mountain Magic, Cocktail Crush and Sun Gold. And I lost a whole lot of those. But that was because they got too hot one day. They fried it.
Yeah.
And then when I went to re-sow, I had really poor germination because we were just in a cold snap. And they were in a heat propagator as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're up now, but they're that size. Okay. But they'll catch up. They'll be okay. So,
mine have certainly not kicked on yet, but they're about to. So I'm in that position of where in the next couple of weeks I either need to pop them on or pop them out.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at what's going on with the weather at the minute. It's still quite chilly in the mornings.
It's freezing in the morning, mate.
So I'm like, as much as they'll cope, they'll survive, they're not going to grow well.
No, I get a check.
So I'm not in any rush to put them out. And I think I've laid off sowing some of my warmer crops until yesterday, my warmer weather crops, because of the fact that the weather's still not...
I haven't sowed my beans yet.
I only did mine yesterday. It was the first lot yesterday.
I don't know, we'll talk about that, but that's not true. I did some dwarf beans for the tunnel. I've done those, but my main crop of beans I haven't done yet because it's just they're going to sit in a tunnel in the morning. Mm. It'll be cold and wet, and it's
no rush. You've got plenty of time. End of the month is soon enough.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Again, I did my first beans.
Things like cute courgettes, melons. You know, winter squash, they're going to really struggle.
I've planted a few of each of those yesterday by candlelight in the eye, by torchlight in the end. It got late on me.
Candlelight down and the whole homestead there, mate. Hurricane lantern.
You know, there's the solar chargeable light bulbs. I had one of those just hung it up in the greenhouse last night.
They're brilliant, aren't they?
About 9 o'clock. It's just too dark to see, so I hung that up. I'd already started, so I just hung it up and finished the job.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
It's great, absolutely fantastic.
You got me on terms, they're absolutely wicked. Yeah. So there's been that. This week has been just putting in a really big automated irrigation system, so I'm learning all about that.
Oh, wow.
Pumps and valves and rainwaters and harvesting and all of that.
Okay.
Which has been interesting, I have to say, but it's, you know, it's not the best time to be taking off for a week, you know.
No.
Because obviously sowing takes precedent and I want to get everything in, but... Mm. I've had also some difficulties with some of the soil that I got last... Yeah, which has gone into one of the polytunnels.
All right.
You know, because it was so wet when I was getting those deliveries of soil. A lot of the topsoil I've got is not right up to standard. There's a lot of stones in it.
Topsoil's really iffy, I've got to say. I bought it before and done it.
Yeah.
Growing topsoil before, it's not great.
No, so I'm cutting topsoil with obviously well-rotted manure.
Okay.
But that's been tricky to get hold of. Everyone's been getting it. We have got some, but just waiting for animals to be kept in because it's wet, so then they're not kicking them out, so then you can't get your hands on that.
Yeah.
And also just getting a tractor and trailer into a field has been nigh on impossible at the moment. Mm. It has been that wet, you know. So anyway, we filled one tunnel with topsoil and muck and rotivated through, but... It has been a lot of work, which you can't do any other way. No. So it's been hand raking, stone picking out, wheelbarrow loads at a time.
Oh, wow. So I've been doing similar. My local garden center, we should talk about soil for a minute, because I was watching Gardener's World about it. And they were talking about the development next year in the UK, peat-based composts are going to be phased out. They're going to be made illegal for sale to the general public.
Yeah.
I think in the industry they're still allowed to use peat-based products, but effectively if you're buying your compost in the garden centre or supermarket, wherever you buy it from, you won't be able to buy peat-based compost from next year. Which, you know, for some of the sort of older, more established gardeners, there's a few of them moaning about it a little bit, but the importance of peat bogs is finally being understood as sort of for carbon sequestering and all that sort of stuff. And so they've said, you know, we're going to stop it and we'll just phase it out and whatever. And obviously, I was watching Gardener's World on the weekend or whatever, and there was a fellow on there talking about, from the industry again, talking about the fact that next year, obviously, you're going to need to buy regular compost.
Mm.
And he's saying, well, we think we've probably just about got to the point where we're ready to remove peat from the compost, and there'll be just about enough to go around. But they're not certain about that at this point. So not only are you going to have a problem getting hold of your manure...
I won't have a problem getting hold of manure next year because I've got lots of animals.
Okay, so I'll solve that problem for you. But people might find it difficult to buy compost this time next year. So it's just something to be aware of. And it's something with this sort of notice, you can start making your own. Now, I know that I can't quite make enough for what I need. So I went out, I was down at the garden centre buying something else the other day. And they had 240 litres of not spent mushroom compost, but mushroom compost for 16 quid. Which I thought was an alternative. As an alternative, certainly as a top dress or as a mulch, was a really good value.
Yeah.
So I got four bags for 16 quid, which is what it was, and I put that on one of the beds, and I'm just going to see how it goes. This is a little experiment. It was very wet, or at least it appeared to be very wet.
Funny enough, I know I spoke about it before, but as I went for my walk this morning, I could see that my neighbour had been along and taken all that leaf mould out.
Yeah.
Do you remember what I said?
Yeah.
And I must go and get his recipe for making his own.
Yeah.
Because obviously he makes his own soil and I'm potting compost. So I'm going to go, I'll speak to him in the weekend and find out what he does and how he does it. And then I'll get back to people on that.
I think it's important because the other thing is they dropped my normal choice of compost. So I buy a variety from a company known as New Horizon. Comes in a red bag. And that's my preferred compost of choice. It's peat-free. It costs a bit, but it's really good. Really good quality. And I know it's going to work. And I've tried different things, and they've not worked as well. So that's the one I prefer. And they didn't have it anymore.
Right.
So they've replaced that with one that's RHS approved or something or other, which is what I was using last night. It feels really nice. It's really nicely, finely sieved. Yeah. And none of the big lumps that you get in a multi-purpose compost. Okay. So it feels really good. Whether it will have the same nutrients in it for the plants, we'll see. But that's what I was potting in last night.
I grew a lot of crops last year.
You did.
And every single thing was grown in potted compost.
Yeah.
Not seed compost.
No.
Not multi-purpose compost.
No.
Everything went in potted compost. So maybe we just got a good batch, but that was from wholesale. But I don't know what the brand or variety is. I'll find out for people. And it's funny, isn't it? I must have handled about 800 of those bags. I couldn't tell you what's real. I'll tell you what's real on the outside.
It's funny what you forget to notice, isn't it? It really is.
They're green and white.
I remember that they're green and white, though, mate. But no, I think it's really important. I think, obviously, if you're out there and you're buying compost, we'd encourage people to avoid using peat-based products these days, as best you can. And there are some really good alternatives out there now. They're kind of getting the hang of it. The one that I bought yesterday was obviously very heavily leaf mould.
Yeah, I mean, what might be interesting is, you know, if you're someone who's serious and you're growing a lot of crops... I don't know what the shelf life is for compost.
It's not great.
No. But if there were enough of you to warrant buying a pallet load and splitting it five way, six way, it actually probably would work out an awful lot cheaper. Yeah. I know that the bags that we're getting are good deal because we're buying in bulk.
Yeah, and you can sometimes get it by the cubic metre, can't you? I find not so many places do that as much.
So we're buying it by the cubic metre, but it's coming bagged.
Right. Oh, wow.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway. So there are still available, you know, large quantity available, but I do think that things are becoming a bit more tricky to get hold of still.
Yeah, and I think being a bit savvy about what you're buying. So, you know, for example, they sell in that garden centre I was at yesterday, whenever it was the other day, they sell like Miracle-Gro.
Right.
Like seed mix. And I'm like, well, seeds don't need loads of nutrients.
No.
They come with what they need for the first 4 to 6 weeks of their lives. Already there. All they need is enough. They don't dry out.
Yeah.
They don't need the nutrient as long as you're prepared to then pot them on. So it's about knowing a little bit about how the plants are going to grow and being savvy with that as well as the other bits you're saying there.
Well, yeah, it's like these broad beans, they're in the pots, they're perfectly fine. Mm. They're going to run out of space rather than nutrient.
Yeah.
And I can't pot them up because that's ridiculous. They're going to go into... they're going to go into the tunnel. And I'm trying to do my maths, but there's 14 lots of 24. So that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm going to wrap them in.
240, so in that, somewhere in that region. Yeah,
there's going to be a lot in there. But I'm going to wrap them in.
It's going to be 300 probably, isn't it? Yeah.
But some of them are dwarf, some of them are main crop, but they're just going to have to go in because I haven't got anywhere else to put them. And sometimes you do have to change your plans. You might really want to put certain crops in certain places, but if the weather dictates, you've got to go with the flow a little bit, haven't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we're at.
And you know, in the past, we've encouraged people to take a bit of a liberty with the weather, and that's certainly the case. You know, you look at what's going on, what the conditions, and I certainly always look ahead at the weather forecast before I start planting anything out of the allotment.
Yeah.
You know, no point, like we've said before, putting spuds out when it's soaking wet. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And same, likewise, it's not great to then sow or plant out when it's boiling hot either.
Well, I can just look around me as well. You know, I'm driving around. It's only just today that I noticed to, you know, the farms around me that they're, you know, turning over their fields. Not ploughing, I mean harrowing out and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
But my wheat's up.
Oh, okay.
My winter wheat's up.
Loving that.
It's got a good 8-9 inches of growth on there.
Yeah.
Beautiful in the sunshine this afternoon. It's only a little plot. Mm. And I'm going to be really interested to see what the return is on it, because for a lot of people listening, you know, they haven't got the capacity to maybe grow an acre of wheat. So maybe some people have, but not everybody.
Yeah.
But I was trying to work out the plot size of this block of wheat, and I think it's probably 4 metres, maybe 5 metres by 40 metres.
Okay.
And that roughly equates to a 20th of an acre when I looked at the size, and I just, you know, worked it out like that.
Yeah.
I'll be very interested to see. I mean, it's as much a test as anything. But I'll be very interested to see what we get back off of it.
So 5 metres by 40, you say?
Yeah.
So 200 square metres. So my allotment to put together is probably 150. So, yeah, be interesting. Because I was tempted to turn the new allotment over just to something like that for this year.
Well,
and then I found loads of fruit, so I'm not going to do it now.
It's I mean, when you see a whole allotment, it's actually quite frightening, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's quite big. I would say it's about the size of a whole allotment.
Yeah,
if you probably
maybe
a bit less.
A bit more. Yeah, I reckon the whole allotment, certainly where I am, anyways, half an allotment's about 75 square meters, so two halves, 150 or so. But I don't know what the tradition was, but they seem to vary in size these days.
Yeah, I think they were a bit bigger than that, mate.
I think they probably were.
I think the tunnel is my tunnel.
Yeah,
is the size of an old allotment.
Oh, okay.
30 by 90.
Yeah.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, you might well be right, because I always looked at it and thought, well, I'm supposed to be able to grow 30, a year's worth of veg for my
feet
family.
By 90
There's no
feet.
Way I can do it on the half plot.
No.
I'm not sure I can do it on the full plot even, to be honest.
I think you could, but I think when you look back at what they used to be, they ate less, right?
No doubt. Yeah.
But also the allotments were so regimented about exactly how many in the row, and like literally on September the 18th, you're allowed to pick them potatoes,
and that's it.
And when you dig them up, that's how many are on. You can't think there's not enough, I'll get the next one. That's it.
Yeah, whereas we would just go, oh, there's not many there, dig the next plant up as well.
So there was an element of that, but also, I don't know whether it's true or not, but I think that, I mean, they were spotless, weren't they? There weren't any raggedy bits. A lot of old were, and I know a lot of people still are like that.
But I
would imagine the time to get that as you need it is quite considerable. You know, when we retire, out basically.
I think realistically, working full time and trying to do it and do other things as well, is no way not to have it pristine. But I would say mine's not looking too bad at the minute. The half plot that I've had is looking pretty good. Yeah. I've got a few things. I've started clearing out, obviously, the old brassicas and all that. And I've started sowing the new crop for this year. And there are a few beds that need a little bit of looking at, but they're mostly in a pretty good nick. But the other half plot, the new half plot, I've hardly looked at.
Yeah.
And that's the job for this weekend. So I'm going to be digging that over. Yeah. And I've no way I'm going to even begin to pretend that I'm going to be doing no dig down there just yet.
But I think the other thing about growing your vegetables like for self-sufficiency on an allotment size plot is that you would have to eat certain things.
Yes.
You couldn't decide to have, you know, exotic vegetables from all.
Well, I think if I were doing spuds, onions and carrots and a few cabbages, I probably could do it.
Yeah.
But because I'm going to give over potentially 4 of my 25 beds to just to tomatoes this year, possibly, then straight away that's, you know, there's no way that that's happening.
Yeah, because for self-sufficiency, just eating tomatoes and not bottling and canning like what you do yourself, you might only have 10 plants.
Well, one of my beds would be enough, I would suggest, just for salad tomatoes for the summer. It'd probably be enough.
So like tomatoes for something. Yeah. It's interesting. Isn't it?
It could be about, yeah.
Depends what you
9 or 12 plants, depending.
And then you're living on cabbage and beans.
Yeah, I don't know. Beans and peas and carrots. And if you go back to that slightly more traditional diet, I guess traditionally British diet, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
That probably is the reason why, part of the reason why. So in terms of other things, obviously I've been... The part of the reason I've not been at the allotment is I've been doing a lot of stuff at home.
Yeah.
Which is not, I suppose, strictly homesteading, but it kind of is, because
it is homesteading out.
It's like
getting your house.
Getting a house in order, getting a garden in order.
I think it's very much homesteading, mate.
Yeah. Always. I've also been considering and pricing up whether I could afford to put a polytunnel on the new plot.
Okay.
Whether I could afford just to, because of the way it's situated, I could have a polytunnel almost at the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
Which would be quite sheltered, but in good sunshine. And feasibly it could go from one side of the plot almost to the other.
Yeah.
But I reckon it's going to cost about £1,500.
For a polytunnel that size?
Yeah, I think so. With all the bits, all the gubbins on it that I want, you know, nice door and bit of ventilation and good straps and good foundation.
Wow.
Sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it? So I don't know if that's realistic at the moment.
Well, there's different ways of doing it.
Yeah, well, there might be other ways of doing it that are more cost effective.
Yeah, I think there is.
So, yeah.
I think there are lots of different ways of making polytunnels. The traditional way is to erect the hoops, which are just in the ground.
Yeah.
And then you bury the sides of the tunnel
and
drag it over.
Yeah.
But there's a million different ways of doing
it. Yeah, so just to buy one, it looked quite expensive and probably prohibitively so. But it might be that... Because the other thing I was thinking was I almost could have a bit like you're doing, have a polythene covered one.
Yeah.
And then have a netted one next to it.
Yeah.
Potentially, and then all of a sudden I've got this really usable variety of growing spaces.
Yeah, I mean, what I see people doing is, obviously when greenhouses become available, they're not worried about the glass. They just take the greenhouse frame, don't they? Stick them up and then cover them with horticultural net.
Yeah.
As a barrier against all your pests for your brassicas. So. But anyway. So what else? I'm trying to just get back on track because we're wandering.
Well, I picked up a chop saw.
So you've got your chop saw.
I've got that. I was really pleased with that. That's
Alan's new workshop, mate.
So that the workshop is, and I finally got the shelving for the workshop. So I've just got to find a minute this weekend to put that together.
We've got a long weekend, mate. Coronation weekend.
Yeah, exactly. So I can start tidying the garage up and then making space to put the bench in.
Lovely.
So that's starting to come together. Done quite a lot of work in the garden. Just amazing, mainly on ornamentals, trying to make it nice. It's lovely out there this time. It's a real spring garden.
Yeah.
So it's been really, really enjoying being out there. And we've had a bit of decking built, so we're just sitting out and eating dinner out there, and that's been lovely.
That's what it's all about, mate. Well, I've sown some flowers, and they're all up and growing, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even done some dahlias.
Yeah. Oh, I love dahlias. Awesome. I want to try and sort out my herb patch a little bit. It's got a little bit, not tatty, but some of the plants are not in great condition. So maybe pull a few out, perhaps replace them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the other one is I started on the swarm trapping.
Yeah, and you've done all right, haven't we?
I actually believe...
You reckon we've caught a couple,
I put a swarm trap out on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And by Monday morning, a swarm had moved into one of them.
Is that here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I haven't checked it yet, but I have a feeling... And I've put four swarm traps out so far. And I have good reason to think that I've caught two swarms already. I've not been able to check them to confirm that, but there's a lot of activity for it to be anything other than a swarm gone in there.
Today, tomorrow, it's not a bad day, is it? I think tomorrow's supposed to get a bit wetter, isn't it?
Yeah, I possibly could have done it this afternoon, but to be honest, I'm just going to leave them and let them settle
in. Well, I'll take some old comb today, and I'll put them in the ones I've got at home. Yeah. I've got some bees going in and out, but it's that lemongrass oil that makes a difference, isn't it?
It's that and having a bit of old honey in there, because, as I said to you before, the one on my garage roof, sat in the full sun, that bakes up, gets warm,
smells,
I can smell it from the road,
nice,
so the bees must be able to, I don't know how they... navigate, but they must. Do they smell it? I don't know, but they're going to find it from miles away anyway.
Pheromone attraction, mate.
Yeah, so they're going to find that from miles away, warming the sunshine like that. So, if I can smell it, I'm sure they'll find it, and it seems to work.
Well,
it was very effective last year.
Keep going,
sure,
mate. Just keep.
Want it?
Yeah, absolutely. Some bloody loop.
Oh dear. Yeah, so lots going on.
So we'll. So the other things that I've been working on, a bit like you are, you know, kind of homesteading, you know, making sure that your building's all right, I've got some lighting going in and things. And I would say that that's all part of keeping the ship running, you know. And I know that for some people, perhaps traditionally, some of those things have been outside of the realm of homesteading. But I think having, making sure that your house is nice, that your water supply is all good and all of those things you were... your roof is good, and you know, all of those jobs that need doing just to keep everything ticking over. And then with a bit of foresight, obviously trying to be as frugal as you can with it, and if there are jobs that you can tackle yourself to have a go at, and you've got some tools and some stuff to help you along the way, or you've got access to material, I think there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. No, as part of it. So I think that's exactly what it is, actually.
Well, part of it for me has been about trying to figure out water catchment at home. And so trying to figure out the best ways and the most efficient ways, and actually cheap ways of finding suitable containers.
Yeah.
Because they're not cheap water butts.
No, I mean, they really are something that when you see them, people getting rid of them, or when you go to your local recycling plant and there, people have got them on the side, or that's when you just grab them up, don't you?
Well, I don't think I think I've got three at home and I'm not paying for any of them.
No, same as myself.
But I need more than three at this point. I'm looking to now going over to, rather than just catching some because there's a drag down pipe, I'm going over to catching a lot and storing it, and also potentially looking eventually down the line at whether I can, as I've mentioned before, feed the chickens drinker from it in time. And trying to figure that out. So it's just putting the infrastructure, at the moment a lot of it's infrastructural, so putting the infrastructure in place.
But that infrastructure as well is something that you can often, you know, guttering and piping and ducting and angles and all of that. It's often knocking around, isn't it, in skips and what have you. Yeah. It's not beyond, you know, realms of possibility to, you know, all these things take time to build up. And, you know, I'm not encouraging anybody to hoard loads of stuff which just sits around doing nothing. But if you've got a project like that in place, you know, it does make a lot of sense to try and do as much as you can.
I've been looking into whether it's feasible to get like IBC totes. There's a spot in my garden where I could tuck one away and no one ever need to see it.
Those white ones,
you know, the big cubes. The cubes, yeah. And I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
I don't think they're cheap, but...
I don't think you'll have to pay for one if you really? No.
Okay.
If you look long enough, it'll just depend what's been in it, but...
Yeah.
I think that they are available. Yeah.
Because there's a spot where one would fit almost perfectly, I think. And if that's the case, then it's the ideal thing to have in that spot. And then it just saves a whole load of hassle.
Yeah.
Loads of water will be there available all the time.
Yeah.
Make it a lot easier. Yeah. So just things like that. I'm just trying and just looking around.
I think some people bury them now.
Bury them?
Yeah, I think some people dig a hole and bury the whole thing. So then they've got a ground source of water.
Oh, okay. They put a pump in there.
That's it, 10,000 gallons or something like that, 10,000 litres. Yeah. There's a lot in them, isn't there?
If you litres rather than gallons. But is they're big, yeah.
Yeah, they are. Mad, aren't they?
And I was just thinking, it's probably cheaper to do that than to buy the equivalent size in water butts.
Yeah, they're a lot.
So if I were going to buy the water butts, then that would be more cost effective, I think. So just things like that, just trying to figure out.
Yeah, they're a lot of money.
But I like a lot of that, strategising.
Sounds good, mate.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen people using wheelie bins.
Have you?
Because they're portable.
What, full of water?
Well, they've got wheels on.
Yeah, but have you tried pulling a wheelie bin full of water?
They're quite big, aren't they? They're quite big, though.
Yeah, they are. And the water sloshes around. You've only got to hit a stone.
Yeah, but handy for a dip tank. Just flip it up, dip in, bosh.
Yeah.
Or you can put a tap at the bottom. And they look like rubbish, so in times of stress when people might be looking for water, they won't go in there and have a look.
Camouflage water butts.
Yeah, leave them out the front of your house, mate. No one. Put a few bin bags on top, mate. No one's going to go through that lot.
Oh, I love that. See, now my brain's whirring. I'm going to be like, oh, I'm going to go look at that one. I go, how much are they?
Well, you'd probably get some, couldn't you? Don't buy them, do you?
No.
Just don't nick them.
Someone nicked mine once. It was you, wasn't it?
No.
Someone nicked my recycling bin.
Oh, man.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
I know it was now.
That's too far to push it where I live. You live surrounded by hills. Anyway.
Yeah, so should we stop there? We come back. We've got to carry on our little self-sufficiency.
We're going to talk about
being self-sufficient. Well,
and we've got some exciting news, haven't we? We're going to announce the winner.
The winner, yeah. So actually, three years ago yesterday, we recorded our first episode.
There you go.
Mad, isn't it?
It's just history.
3 years ago. Can you believe we've been doing this for 3 years?
I can.
All right, we'll pause there, we'll come back and we'll talk about self-sufficiency. Okay, we're back. So we were going to talk about just continuing this series of self-sufficiency and the notion of being self-sufficient in certain things, okay?
Yeah.
And so far we talked about eggs, didn't we?
We talked about eggs, talked about salad.
So today...
Well, leaf.
Leaf, salad leaf, didn't we? Yeah, very specifically. Yeah. So we were talking about, you know, what else could we perhaps touch on today? And I think you wanted to talk about summer?
Well, I wanted to talk about a couple of things, because one is pretty simple.
Okay.
I want to talk about chilies.
Chilies, okay.
Because I don't think it actually takes a lot to grow all the chilies you're going to need for a year.
No.
I don't think it does.
No, it really doesn't, no.
I really, and I thought, well... If you're somebody who uses chili powder, chili flakes, chili con carne, well, chilies actually, you within a few plants, you can actually become self-sufficient in that.
The only thing you can't do is be self-sufficient in fresh chilies all year round.
Not fresh chilies all year round.
But you can be self-sufficient in frozen chilies.
Yeah, or dried chilies.
Not quite the same. There's a couple of recipes I can think of where it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But for the bulk of your chili use, but you can be, can't
you? Pickled chilies?
Pickled chilies, to a degree, will work. They're not the best shelf life.
You could probably brine them.
You can certainly lacto-ferment, yeah.
Yeah. But there are other processes which, you know, yeah, you might have to change some of your eating habits, but for me, I know I don't buy any chilies.
Yeah.
And I actually don't buy any chili powder, really.
No.
Because for the majority of things I use chili in, I can use fresh or dried or frozen chilies. If it was a dish where you needed the powder, though, I can understand it would be a bit more trickier.
Okay, so we're going to grow some chilli plants, which would have been, or typically would be sown by about now, wouldn't they? Normally by the end of April you would have them sown.
You definitely should try. Yeah. But, I mean, literally, I sowed chillies today.
Yeah, so if people were growing it this weekend, it'd probably be okay, especially if you've got an indoor space to get them germinating and keep them for the first few days or weeks.
And what I would look for, if you wanted to... Now, there are people out there who know way more about chillies than me, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I like chillies.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest chilli eater in the world.
No.
We use chillies every week, either in a chilli con carne or a curry or something like that. Yeah. Right? I would say, though, what there is such a wide variety of both strength of flavour, strength of heat, but also size of plants.
Mm-hmm.
So, like your tomatoes, honestly, I have seen some incredible varieties of chilies which would live quite happily in a pot on your windowsill indoors, which would give you that extra length of time. So, you probably would get fresh chilies for quite a long time.
Yeah, you could potentially,
One that springs to mind is called Basket of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's a small, compact, it's probably about, you know, a foot square kind of bush. Yeah. But it doesn't get any bigger than that.
Yep.
Covered in short and quite
hot. Got a name for a reason, right?
Yeah. But very tasty. I've grown that before.
Okay.
Absolutely delicious. But I tend to grow one type of chilli because we like it. It's a bit all-purpose.
Those ones you grew last year were lovely as well.
So I grow cayenne most of the time.
Was that cayenne, was it? They were massive as well.
Yeah, some of those were chilies and some of those were not. I got a bit confused last year, didn't I? There was a bit of Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Some of those were jalapeno.
Yeah.
But I think they were labelled wrong. I honestly think
I as well, because I've processed 5 kilos of those at one point and they'll be off.
And some were hot and some weren't.
I'm not sure about the heat of them, but what I do know is that they all looked more or less the same regardless.
Yeah. So... with regards to ones that I actually know, the cayenne chili is probably a finger length chili.
Yeah.
Starts green, turns red, pointed end, medium. Yeah. I wouldn't even say that hot, medium heat. I'm not talking about your Scotch bonnet or your habanero ones, but you can grow those. But a good all-purpose chili.
Yeah.
Obviously the ingredient for cayenne pepper.
Yeah.
But fresh, beautiful, and dries really well.
Mm-hmm.
I put loads through the dehydrator last year.
Okay.
And you know, they curl up and stuff like that. But when they're like that, I'm pretty sure you could put them in a mill then and they would make chili flakes.
So I actually dehydrated mine on a line in the kitchen. So I literally, as they start to ripen, take them off, hang them up in the kitchen.
Needle and thread them?
No, just literally I've got a string which we quite often have cards on
for the year.
There's a string just along just above a windowsill, and it's not ideal because it's in light, but it does the job. And it just literally a bit of like parcel string or something like that, some equivalent, and literally some little mini clothes pegs.
Oh, right, okay.
Peg them on there by the stalk. So keep pick them off with a bit of stalk, peg them up on the stalk, leave them to dry. They'll ripen first and then they'll dry out.
And I've needle and threaded them
exactly like that. Yeah.
And had them hanging up in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's, it's not even that dry in a steamy environment.
No, exactly.
They're absolutely brilliant. And then get them into the jars and they'll be absolutely fine.
So I've then you can either pull them apart, cut them, and dry them as they are and store them as they are, or I've got a coffee grinder that I use to grind them down.
Yeah.
So rather than using it for coffee beans, obviously it needs a good clean out after you've used chilies in it.
Or you have a designated
one. I've got a designated one that's not for coffee.
Yeah.
It's for, I've done it for, typically I've used it in the past.
How fine could you get that down? Could you get it to a powder?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so you can make your own chili powder.
Yeah, you can. So when I've used it before, I've done it with dehydrate. You know when I do the passata?
Yeah.
The skin and the seeds are left over. And I dehydrate that and then I grind that down. And I grind that down to a powder. And then mixed with a little bit of water, it's very much like a tomato puree.
No.
I tend not to puree it. I tend to just put it straight in like you would tomato puree as a thickening agent.
Yeah.
Into various sauces.
Like a stock as well, isn't
it? Yeah, it does, and it works really well, and it makes, you know, it adds a really tomato-y flavour to whatever you're using, even if you're using like tin tomatoes or shop bought ones, it works really well. But it will do the same to the chilies, so it'll grind them right down to this really fine powder. Yeah. And you can store that as chili powder. So you can,
that's what it is.
So with very little equipment, you don't need a dehydrator.
No.
If you've got one, great, but if you don't need one.
No.
And obviously most people have got a coffee grinder. You probably could use your coffee grinder. You'd have to clean out really well.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't.
I probably wouldn't because I happen to have a second one.
Yeah.
Forget why.
But it would be, obviously chilies, if you're growing them, need, I would say, to be grown indoors. I know you can have a good year and grow them outside.
Yeah.
Some varieties do better outside than others, but if you can give them the protection of a unheated greenhouse, you know, my plastic powerhouse grows them beautifully.
Yeah.
But if you live perhaps somewhere, I know we've got some Scandinavian listeners, for example, they might not have the length of growing season.
Yeah.
And so grow them indoors.
Yeah.
You know, just grow them on that sunniest windowsill you've got. And if you pick them when they're green, they will ripen, they will turn over.
In pots, so they will need feeding.
They would, and
a good tomato feed would do the job for that. So whatever you use to feed tomatoes.
Yeah, and so I know that if I grow those KNs, they're so productive.
Yeah.
They keep making more and more flowers. I grow probably 4 plants.
Yeah.
Maybe even 3 would be enough.
Yeah.
And that's enough chilies for me for the year
to
use every week. Yeah. If you know, obviously it depends on
how many you use.
They go. But they will end up, those KNs, you'll have to cane them and tie them in. They'll get up to about 5 or 6 feet high.
So they need supporting, they need tying in, and obviously they need feeding.
Yeah.
You do yours in the ground in the polytunnel now, don't you? No, do you not? They're in pots in the polytunnel.
They're in flower pots. The ones that I got from supermarkets used to sell for cut flower in.
Oh,
that's all they're in.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's all they're in, mate. I'll give them a weekly feed.
Yeah.
If I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll
get better production if you feed them. I've found that sometimes, particularly if they're in a smaller pot, they run out of food.
Well, it's this size.
Yeah, so it's a big old pot that you're putting them in.
But do you remember a couple of years ago, I still had chilies on my plant in December?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They were fresh.
If it's not too cold, you will get that.
Yeah.
Potentially. I had it with tomatoes last year, didn't I? They weren't particularly tasty at that point,
so,
but they were still there.
So I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility to be self-sufficient in chilies. If you're not that fussy about the variety, and if you've got some indoor growing space, if you live in a colder climate.
And the other thing to say is they freeze really, really well.
Oh, do they?
Yes. Unless, what they won't then do is be that fresh chilli for like a taco or a salsa or any of those things where you want that kind of fruity freshness. If you're going to cook them, no problem. A bit like with the courgettes, they go a bit mushy after they've been frozen, but they do freeze really well. So if you've not got capacity to dry them, or that feels like a step too far, or for whatever reason, you just want to go, I'm just going to bung them in the freezer. And I've done it before because I haven't had time to do anything else.
Yeah.
Bag them up, stick them in the freezer, forget about them. Yeah. You know, and then they come out and they just get cut up.
They're mushy then, are they, basically?
They don't come out mushy, but they're not like the kind of fresh chilli that you would get if you bought a fresh one from a shop. They're kind of a bit soft and a bit sad looking. Yeah. Still get the flavour, still get the heat.
Oh, yes.
That'll go, so it'll still cook up nice, but I wouldn't recommend them necessarily for that kind of crunchy, fruity.
Yeah, I don't ever eat chilies like that.
Salsa-y. Well, no, huevos rancheros that you do? Do you not put chilli on that?
No, I have a chilli tomato sauce.
Okay.
But it's a cooked salsa.
Which is the other thing to say, is that there's some really good chilli sauce recipes out there. You can make your own Tabasco sauce.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can make your own sweet chilli jam.
Yeah.
You can make, you know, chilli jelly I've seen done before, which is really good
You've made some incredible things. So, and that's what, you know, I'm not the greatest user of chilies or...
Yeah.
Because we have them and we like them. But it's just so nice that I don't ever
run out of chili powder or chilies. Yeah. I've got them, and they're delicious.
Well, that 5 kilo batch you sent me, you brought me like a massive bag of them, didn't you?
Yeah, we did grow a lot last year.
And I turned those all into chili jam, to cowboy candy rather, which is just basically sweet pickled chilies. Yeah. And they're so good.
Yeah, they're so great. Good. I know they are.
But they're not as versatile as perhaps.
Here's a bunny.
Oh, there we go.
Look at that.
Straight in there. Or youngster as well.
Yeah, not too bad though. And looking healthy, which is nice to see because we've had, in the UK, we have had some different diseases for rabbits, but we're looking at, I would say that is a springborn. Yeah, it's not an old one.
No.
But munching on the grass, looking healthy.
Yeah. Nice to see.
Absolutely lovely.
So, chilies, that's that boxed off. What was the other thing you wanted to talk about?
Well, I was talking about what I wanted to try and sort of advocate. Oh, it's lovely, it's coming right over. what I wanted to try and advocate, I suppose, a little bit more is that one of the things that I've learned over the last year is that I could freeze a lot of beans, but I don't eat beans in the winter anymore.
Mm.
And so it's about coming up with being self-sufficient in something might not mean having it all the time.
Oh, that's controversial.
All right.
Okay.
And so what I'm saying is that I'd like to be self-sufficient in summer vegetables, so i.e. vegetables that I eat in the summer.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean, though, that I'm going to eat them all year. Because and it's obvious, he's having a right old munch on the docks. it's become evident, as I suppose would be expected in my job, is that I grew a glut of beans last year, I grew a glut of tomatoes, and I grew a glut of courgettes last year.
Yeah.
With the exception of using courgettes and tomatoes in as a stew base, frozen, I don't find that I want to eat a courgette now. What I want to eat are brassicas, because I'm looking at them in the tunnel.
They're
fresh. They look delicious. Yeah. That's what I want to eat.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually becoming more seasonally effective.
Mm.
And so going back to becoming self-sufficient in something, it's about working out what does that mean to you as an individual.
Okay.
For me now, it's starting to mean something different. It's not even meaning I want potatoes all the time.
It's eating seasonally.
It's eating what's available seasonally.
Okay.
And if you start to think like that, being self-sufficient in summer vegetables is actually really easy.
it really is.
You're going to get bored.
I'm going to counter that with there are some things that freeze really well.
Of course.
That are worth freezing.
I agree.
That are worth preserving to eat when you want to eat them. So I really enjoy eating a few broad beans occasionally in the winter.
Yeah, see, I don't.
No.
No. What I do like is dried bolota.
And I like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would like to expand my use of dried bolota because I use it two or three ways. Whereas, you know, one of the things I know that you've made me before, which I really loved, was a broad bean pate.
Yeah.
I bet you could make a serious bolota pate.
Oh, yeah.
It would be absolutely magnificent, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I suppose what I'm trying to get people to think about is that, let's say there's a family of four or five people.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to become self-sufficient in vegetables for the summer, and by the summer, I'm talking probably late June, by the time some of those things are starting to fruit, probably right up until maybe nearly October.
I think right possibly to, even beyond that.
Beyond that, yeah.
I think possibly I'm talking about November.
Yeah, fresh, seasonable veg. Go on, Alice, you can get a photo. I don't think you will.
No.
I would say that there are two or three absolute belting plants for that.
Okay, so go on then. What are they?
You can guess the first two.
I'll go courgettes, get number one.
You don't need many courgettes, do you?
No.
I would say for a family of four,
four courgettes.
That is a lot of courgettes.
That's a hell of a lot of courgettes. You'll be eating courgettes every other day, probably. Absolutely, and I think the fallback there is that they do, if you dice them and then freeze them, keep really well, and you can, like you say, bring them out for soups and stews and whatever else, and that.
Which is all I do with them.
They work perfectly well.
But I don't want, because I eat lots of courgette. Yeah. I love it. I like it in different ways.
Yep. Agreed.
I don't want it like that in the winter.
No, and I tend not to eat it like that in the winter.
No. I never buy it.
Okay, I would.
I never buy courgette, ever.
Yeah, I would. I probably need to change that, but that'll come into
never, ever.
Yeah.
So I would say they're your first one.
Yeah.
And then second, which I would, for me, has got to be beans, French beans, right?
Okay.
You could use runners, right? But I just prefer French beans, right? That's my preference.
Yeah.
But you could have both. You could have different ones.
I've since last year and doing the runner beans for the first time in years and years and years. I love the runner beans.
Yeah, they were great,
so tasty.
Just eat them young, please.
And I'll tell you what, they froze better than the French beans.
Yeah.
So I won't be freezing any French beans this year because I found that, like you, I don't want to eat frozen beans in the winter.
I don't want to eat any frozen beans.
No, and I'm quite happy to eat frozen broad beans, and I'm probably quite happy to eat the frozen runner beans if they're already cut and sliced.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but I don't mind them stringed.
Yeah, I string them and then slice them and then freeze them.
Yeah, but have you seen, when I say stringed, I meant pulled through like into long thin strips.
Yeah, that's how I cut them. Yeah. I
old fashioned.
Yeah,
old fashioned.
Like my nan used to.
Not into diamonds.
Yeah, no, not diamonds.
But I would say after your courgettes, growing French beans particularly, I don't think there's many crops that you get as much food from that amount of space. No. And I would encourage people to grow two types. I would encourage them to grow the dwarf beans and grow the climbing beans. And I was always of a position, why do people grow dwarf beans? You don't get many. Why don't people? It's the same space, you put the same plants in, but they grow faster.
Grow faster.
You get them quicker.
Yeah.
And they're so much easier. They're easy to manage.
Well,
you know,
that's what I sowed yesterday. Because they're going to go in now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wait a week or two and then put the climbing beans in. What I should get is a crop of dwarf beans before the climbing beans are ready.
Yeah.
And so that's going to extend my season.
And what I would like you to do is in about 8 weeks' time, do another load of dwarf for at the end.
For when the other beans come
out.
Right. Exactly right.
And I would say that the amount of beans that come off a dwarf bean plant is ridiculous, isn't it?
It's
certain varieties.
Yeah.
I like this one that I found last year called the Canadian Wonder.
Which is what I sowed some of yesterday.
Ah, see how you get with them.
I sowed the last of my purple TP and I sowed all the purple TP I had left to get rid of that seed. And then
you can ram
them
in and they hold each other up.
Yeah.
They are amazing crop. And I don't think you would need that many. I really don't.
Well, I did, what did I do? About 42... dwarf beans.
Yeah.
And that'll get us a lot of beans.
Yeah. And a wigwam of beans. Even one wigwam of beans, that's got eight stations. Yeah. That is a lot of climbing beans.
Well, if you think my raised beds are in 5 foot, so a metre and a half squares, I can probably get all 42 of those beans in that space.
Yeah.
Or I can get a wigwam
with
probably 24 beans around it.
Yeah.
Two to each of the 12 poles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I can double the amount of plants that I grow in that smaller space.
Yeah.
And I will probably get, for that amount of space, maybe even as much or more, perhaps, than the climbing beans. I don't know.
I'd say you get a bit less.
A bit less.
A bit less, yeah. I don't think the climbing beans have such a long season. Because I think if you keep... sorry, I don't think the dwarf beans have such a long season. Because when you get... What climbing beans obviously can naturally do is they will send out some side ones. Whereas the dwarf ones, when you pick them all, they're kind of all
gone. That is
true,
yeah.
But...
Yeah.
They don't all come at the same time, dwarf beans. No. They do go over quite a... And honestly, I was made up with those. I've grown them in green crates before with seven or eight in each one.
Yeah.
Been absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But I remember just going out and you think you've got them all when you go out the next day.
Yeah, they've missed some.
You're going to eat beans.
Yep.
Beans, you're going to eat courgettes. A lot of. And then I don't know about you, but...
You do know.
I've grown some baby carrots. I've grown carrots.
This is where we're going to diverge from.
I've grown carrots because they're a different colour.
Okay.
So I've got something green.
Yeah.
Something yellow, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I want something orange.
Yeah. And that is very much about the fact that we have, I think probably, and we discussed it before, slightly different eating habits.
Yeah.
So whereas I would grow tomatoes.
Yeah.
And I will be growing tomatoes.
Yeah. And they would probably be my next one.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I honestly think that in the summer, if you've got some onion, some lettuce, some tomato, and a gherkin, a courgette, or a cucumber, but I ain't even that worried. I can use courgettes like I can use cucumber.
Yeah.
You've got a meal. You've got a whole meal. Yeah, you might want a bit of dressing, and you could get fancy and have some feta or some whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're just having a salad, you've got that. The meal's there.
Yeah.
Oh. So is there anything nicer?
So we're saying if you've got, let's say... a metre square or a metre and a half square of dwarf beans.
Yeah.
Or climbing beans, or perhaps one of each. If you've got three or four courgette plants.
Yeah.
If you've got, let's say,
I don't know, a metre and a half square of carrots in rows. Is that going to be enough?
A
little bit more space for
no, yeah, they do take up space, they do, carrots. Don't they? They do. I would say that looking at what I grew last year in the tunnel, I would say a metre and a half, 2 metres square, you're going to get a lot.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of carrots. To get you to the end of, you know, you're not going to have carrots all through the winter and spring and all that.
But if you've sowed a row, and then 2 weeks later sowed another row, and then
I'd sow them all together, because carrots will stay in the ground by the time you've eaten one.
Okay.
And what you might be able to do is eat one row and then put spring onions in after it, put things like that in.
So we're going to sow maybe 5 or 6 rows of carrots, about a metre to a metre and a half.
Yeah. And I would go for early nont.
Early nont, okay.
Yeah, because it's then, quick growing, stump rooted, goes quite deep. Pretty good all round carrot. You know, you could go for your Chantenays and your Autumn Kings, but we're not worried about that. You could go Amsterdam Forcing, which means I grow quicker.
Yeah.
It's quite a nice variety, quite sweet. There's another one that I'm trying to remember, but I can't remember what it's called. Another early one, but I can't remember it.
And I'm gonna say 6 to 12 tomatoes, depending on how much tomatoes you eat.
Yeah, lovely.
And then all of a sudden, you ain't buying any of those 4 things from the minute they start going.
No.
For as long as you can keep those plants going. Bless you. Bless you.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so self-sufficiency for the summer in summer crops.
Yeah, and if I said to you, as the more chefy of us, with the addition of a few herbs, you've got beans, tomatoes, courgettes, onions, salad leaf.
Rice and garlic, please.
Carrots, yeah.
Rice and garlic.
You could do a billion recipes.
Yeah.
I actually think becoming self-sufficient in garlic is really hard.
Because you can't keep it long enough.
No, I just think it takes up loads of space for someone like you who eats probably a head a day.
I don't eat a head a day.
I have 4 heads a week.
No, I reckon... Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, you do, Al. In all your cooking, in a good week. Yeah.
I reckon we eat at least 2 a week. At least 2 a week. So I reckon if I had 100 to 150, that'd do me.
Oh, right, that's not too bad.
Yeah. But they need to be good size, because I can't be dealing with the fat for peeling those little
So
clothes.
Then it becomes different, doesn't
I'd
it?
I'd rather buy it at that point.
Yeah. So I've got... How many have I got in? 400? They won't touch the sides.
No.
They won't touch the sides.
No.
I think garlic is tricky. I think it's really tricky to get it. It takes up a lot of space for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And when it comes out, late June, early July, there are still things that you can put in there. But
there is nothing better than that first new season garlic.
Yeah, it's just lovely. So. It's lovely. Absolutely lovely. But the way I use garlic, I don't eat a lot of fresh garlic.
Mm.
So... I might be better going over to the elephant garlic and
I've considered that,
smashing that in because they're big and then making a lot of puree and freezing it.
But you'd almost have to buy some to grow it for the first year or two just to increase your stock, because it's so expensive to buy. It's ridiculous.
However, you could be like I was this weekend, walking down to your local woodland and picking your own Ramson's wild garlic.
Yes, just don't kill yourselves. Don't kill yourselves.
So what might be nice is if there are things, those summer staples that people eat, they could tell us what they might have instead. And
well, it'd be interesting, because obviously...
And I'm not saying that, you know, obviously, this is ideal, isn't it? You know, I would struggle not to have a pepper when I want a pepper and something else when I want something else. But they're the things that I would eat. You know, some also mentions would be, I'd probably struggle not to have some early potatoes.
Yeah.
Some nice earlies.
Yeah.
And I would probably struggle not to eat fresh sweet corn.
I have genuinely considered doing the whole of the new allotment pot over just the sweet corn. That was one of the
talk
options
about your glut
that was explored.
But yeah, but they're not what I would call, you know, to be self-sufficient in sweet corn. You don't need to grow loads, because you're not going to eat that long. You're going to have a really small window.
Well, again, though, it freezes really well, so it's one of those ones, if you can be bothered.
Well, do you know what? Mine did not freeze very well this year.
Did it not?
It was really poor.
Was it?
Yeah, and it might have been the freezing technique or that. Yeah. But, you know, we peaked loads and put it in and not been enamoured with it. And so it comes back to that thing for me, which is that, do you know what? Don't actually have to eat it.
I suppose the trade-off here, and this is the trade-off we've been discussing the whole of this second section, is between the drop-off in quality of the crop if you were to preserve it.
Yeah.
does that make it still more desirable than eating something that's actually in season right now?
Yeah.
And that, if the question is, where on the dial are you for that?
Yeah.
Where do you fit? So you're saying that more and more you're going over to, I'm just going to eat what's fresh, and I'm happy to do
it. Al, let's not beat around the bush. I'm going to eat what's free, because it's what I've got in the tunnel, all right? There's cabbages in the tunnel, Al.
I'm going to eat cabbages.
I'm eating them. There's cauliflowers in the tunnel. There's kale, there's chard, there's PSB, there's all them things.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost no money, so that's what I'm having. Yeah. But you might also say that, from an evolutionary point of view, we're geared, our bodies are geared to eat seasonally.
Yeah.
And that's what we would have done for millennia before we had the technology to store and put crops over.
Definitely get behind that, but I'm just going to add a few embellishments of mine.
A little few tweaks.
Yeah, a little super song.
So it'd be interesting to hear what people say about that. I mean, from a frugal point of view, though, if you are someone who has to supplement what you grow with what you buy, it is evident that some things are way cheaper when they are in season. I'm buying apples at the moment. Are you?
A few, but not as many as I would have.
Expensive, you know. And so, you know, it's not surprising, is it, that the cost of lettuce goes right down when it becomes that they don't have to travel so far. And you know, Swedes, carrots, they're all cheap at the moment, aren't they? Because that's what we've got. And you know, those were, well, not now, but maybe a few months ago, you know, those winter veg, which were those staples for your soups and stews and stuff like that, they are cheaper.
I've got to say, I've been looking at it. Obviously, I've been planning for the new allotment plot and trying to figure out the best use of that space. I mean, think about multiple different ways of doing it. But one of the things that's come into view, I think, really clearly for me, is that there's an opportunity there to grow some things that I might not have grown before.
No, yeah, I agree.
And for me, that a lot of that is about some of the staples. You always talk about the spuds and the onions, and I'm going to do a big old stand of sweet corn on there and some carrots and all those things that actually mostly don't need to be covered from the birds as well, which is another thing that I need to consider.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know what I'd grow on it. I'd grow Sapo on at least half of it.
Well, I've got Sapo Mirror, which I've just got, whatever I got, which I was originally planning to put in the other plot. I'm just going to grow what I've got of those, and then I've got loads of multi-sown onions. I've probably got a year's worth of onions.
Yeah. Got onions, potatoes, and then corn if you can.
And I'll do, big old stand of corn. I'm going to sow all the corn seeds I've got. I would do did 50 last night.
If you can do them, I would do dwarf bolota.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even get the ones that got the canes. Get the dwarf ones. Well, let them dry, shell them out, or you like eating them fresh as well.
I do like eating them fresh, yeah. And the other thing I've been thinking about is that with the new bit of deck that we've got, could I grow some citrus at home? It's quite sheltered. Is it warm enough? I've got the greenhouse to take them in over winter.
And like with you with garlic, I couldn't keep up, because I eat so many lemons, I couldn't grow that.
No, I know that I couldn't either, but then maybe it's not lemons, maybe it's limes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where's that tipping point? Where's the value for money in that sort of situation and decision? Trying to figure out what the best way of doing it, and I'm really tempted to try.
Yeah, have a go, yeah.
Because I've got the greenhouse space to bring them in to protect them from frost.
In the winter,
that's all it is. And then, so can I grow a few lemons? And would they be the most amazing lemons? I don't know. Can I grow enough to make a difference, just at least while they're in season? I don't even know that at this point.
I'm sure you could do anything.
But yeah, I reckon it's worth a try anyway.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's worth a try. Anyway, we should take a break there.
Absolutely.
We're going to come back, because we've got a little competition and we need to identify.
I don't know if people are going to be able to handle the excitement now.
Excitement?
It's up there with the lottery, isn't it? It's up there with the National Lottery.
National Lottery, well, the odds of winning are pretty better than the National Lottery, so somebody's going to be well pleased. I'll be back in a sec. Okay, so we're back. So last thing we've got to do today, mate, we've got a giveaway, haven't we? Because we're 3 years in now, believe it or not.
So
it's mad, isn't it?
I don't know how people have managed to hold themselves together this last
Do you know what? I reckon people joined the Facebook group just so they could get a thing in, so they could be involved in this. So I think it is exciting.
What did you offer? A pair of your signed underpants, was it?
Something like that, yeah. No, we've got a copy of the River Cottage, very first River Cottage cookbook, Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. And it's not just a cookbook, as we said about before.
It's an absolute Bible, mate.
Yeah, it is.
It's got some great recipes in it.
Yep.
And dare I say, it was at the forefront of that next revolution of self-sufficiency in the UK.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of pretension in it.
No.
There's not a lot of wrapping it up.
No.
There's a lot of honesty in it. I love the way he writes about growing vegetables. And
the integrity as well, of course, because he's done it, hasn't he? So from that point of view, I think it's a really fabulous book. So we've obviously got that to give away, because I've got a spare copy. I think we should sign it, mate.
I think
well funny.
What we do is we'll put a nice note in it.
All right, put a nice note.
And we'll put a pack of seeds in each.
All right, okay. All right. So I've got 14 names from the Facebook group,
okay,
people
mate.
That did the thing. So I'm not going to tell you who they are.
Okay.
All right.
I just want you. I've just put them down randomly. So can you put down a number from 1 to 14, please?
Fine. I've not seen it.
You've not seen it, so you tell me.
Any random number.
Any random number you like.
Oh, mate, I'm feeling the pressure. I'm going to go for number 5.
Number 5 is Michelle Fletcher.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Which I believe is down under.
Really?
I believe so. So I'll get that to you. I don't know how long that's going to take to get down.
Under. In time for next year's growing. Yeah. No. Well, let me think. So.
No, it'll be in time for, because they'll be coming into their autumn now.
Yeah.
So we're just in time for next spring.
I hope that seasonally and that it works. It depends where you are in Australia, doesn't it?
I guess so. I have no idea.
But I think, I don't know.
Anyway, so that'll be, I'll be getting, now what I'll do is I'll get in touch and we'll arrange some sending off and place to send it to.
Absolutely.
All right.
Brilliant.
Okay, lovely.
Well, congratulations.
I always felt like it should be a fanfare or some applause. I'm not okay enough with all that sort of gubbin. So, congratulations. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. And we will see you all next time.
Toodle pip.
Cheers, bye. So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK Podcast Facebook group. Come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places, and please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.